And Abraham Lincoln, writing, of course, in the Civil War era, referred to the Declaration as the electric cord that binds patriotic hearts from one generation, from one era to another. It bound the hearts of the Civil War era people with those of the founders and of us today. We are all together bound by this one beautiful document.
That's Katie Kennedy, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Ahead, we'll talk about the Declaration Decoded, a guide to the document that inspired our nation. Katie Kennedy is a historian, educator, and author whose work focuses on making foundational American documents accessible to modern readers. Her previous books include The Constitution Decoded, a guide to the document that shapes our nation, and The President's Decoded, a guide to the leaders who shaped our nation. Katie, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you so much.
Well, this is a book about the Declaration of Independence, and we're coming up on this 250th anniversary. So why do you think it's more important, perhaps now than ever, that we know what's in that document, especially for young people?
So the Declaration of Independence, written in 1776, was America's first and most important document of protest and resistance. It embodies our political principles and contains probably the most beautiful lines ever written by an American who wasn't Abraham Lincoln, at least. And it's a reminder to us in this era where we tend to interact with each other through mean social media posts, that we can, in fact, speak with eloquence, with passion, that we can do difficult and dangerous things. The people who signed this document were potentially signing their lives away, and they knew that. It's just a good reminder for us, I think, with this anniversary, that it's good to touch base with that document, which is so foundational to our ideology and to who we are as a people.
Well, describe this book for us. How do you work through the Declaration and help us understand it better?
So we say that we decode it, by which we mean simply to make it accessible. So we have passages of the Declaration of Independence on one page, and then I explain what it means the next page and try to give the context, the setting, explain things that may not be immediately obvious to modern readers and go through and make it accessible that way. Part of the issue, of course, is that it's political theory, and that's not the easiest stuff to read in any situation. Part of it is the difference from the 18th century to today with the language that we use. Part of the issue was Thomas Jefferson, who, of course, wrote the draft of the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson was not understood by everybody even in 1776, and that was almost intentional. You know, Jefferson began the document by explaining the right to revolution, declaring that right, goes into 27 grievances against King George III, and ends by invoking the right to revolution that he set up in the opening paragraph. But he was not trying to explain things. He was trying to justify things. So while not every colonist understood exactly what he meant by every grievance, the weight of them together made people angry. And that's what he needed, because they were about to take on the biggest empire in the world, which had just beaten France. And now these 13 little upstart colonies were going to, you know, inexplicably think they had a shot against Great Britain. And it was certainly a moment, kind of a gut check moment. So Jefferson needed people to go in fired up.
Before we talk more about the Declaration and what it really means, I want to point out that even though this is marketed as a middle grade book for 10-year-olds and older, it's certainly a book that adults can benefit from as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We intended it to be a book that older middle grade kids could understand and young adults could understand, but also people like me who have been around for a few years to be able to touch base again with that document. There is so much confusion about what the Declaration was, what it said, what it means, whether it is or is not the same thing as the Constitution, just lots of you know, confusion with that. And so we wanted to make it accessible to adults as well. I wrote a previous book, The Constitution Decoded, and we found that so many homeschooling parents and teachers told us that they hid a copy in their desk drawer. And then when a kid asked a question, they would real quick slide that out, you know, redirect the child, look up the answer. And we thought that was a necessary kind of thing to give people a document that will help explain it to adults as well as to kids.
As you pointed out, the language in here at times is just beautiful, very eloquent, well-written. So it's often quoted, but people perhaps don't understand what it really means. So what are some of the common misconceptions that people have about the Declaration of Independence, and can you clear those up for us?
For one thing, there's just an enormous amount of confusion about it and the Constitution. The U.S. Constitution is the highest law of the land. It was written after the United States existed fully and securely. You can argue that the United States existed, had had for 2 days at the time the Declaration of Independence was, you know, was passed. But the Constitution has the force of law. The Declaration of Independence, of course, was earlier in 1776. It did not create American independence, but it announced it to the world. Kind of really a trumpet blast, the way that Congress did this document, and has become the model for so many declarations around the world. It does not have the force of law. It does have the force of poetry and of principle. Historian Pauline Meyer calls the Declaration American Scripture, which I think is a great phrase. And Abraham Lincoln, writing, of course, in the Civil War era, referred to the Declaration as the electric cord that binds patriotic hearts from one generation, from one era to another. It bound the hearts of the Civil War era people with those of the founders and of us today. We are all together bound by this one beautiful document.
And the document is aspirational, certainly at the time, but still aspirational today because it has language about equality, etc. And we're still working on that.
Yeah, we absolutely are. Jefferson originally wrote the document with 28 grievances. The final one Congress struck, and it was an indictment of the international slave trade. Thomas Jefferson, a slave owner, striking at that in 1776, and it was too provocative and too divisive. And so Congress, trying to hold all those 13 colonies together, struck that final grievance. So even there, you can see the seeds of, and part of the flower of that national problem that we still continue to have with racism, with the legacy of slavery, with the idea that all men are created equal, and then people who enslaved other people signed this document. So it is aspirational, and we have not always lived up to those principles. We've always tried, and we're still trying, and hopefully we're getting a little bit closer.
One of the things you point out in the book is that there may be some typos in the document. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So Jefferson wrote the draft, and it was submitted to Congress. We don't know, by the way, who read it. We know it was read out loud to them. We don't know who read it. It's possible that Jefferson did, and he would have been the worst possible choice. He was the best writer in Congress. He was the worst speaker. But it did have his diacritical marks on it, that what he wanted to do, if he had to read it, at least. But we know that the phrase inalienable rights was in that original draft that Jefferson wrote and perhaps read aloud. And after 2 days of sitting there and everybody editing the document all together, I mean, that's a writer's nightmare, right? And I have to sit there and listen to them. And they could be petty. They changed neglected utterly to utterly neglected. Every word they poured over. But inalienable rights made it through Congress too, that meat grinder of Congress, and went to the printer as inalienable rights. And it came back printed as unalienable rights. So whether the printer just made a typo or whether he decided he should get to edit Jefferson as well, we're not quite sure. Mary Catherine Goddard was one of the printers, the only woman's name on the Declaration. She put her own name, tiny print at the bottom. But she does not seem to have been the one who did this. She printed a later version.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about what they meant, especially at that time, and how it might be interpreted today as what are inalienable rights.
So the idea is that people have rights that the government cannot take away. They're not dependent on the government. We have these rights. If the government tries to take them away, then we change the government. And it goes back, you know, it predates Jefferson. John Locke, the Enlightenment thinker, talked about that, and Jefferson borrowed some images and some phrases, which was more common then and more acceptable at the time. And the idea is that governments get their legitimacy from the consent of the governed. They do not have the right to take away rights of the people. The government is only there to make us safer, healthier, happier, wealthier. And if the government's not doing that, it should be changed.
There's so much in this Declaration of Independence to inspire us even to this day and understand why this nation was formed. And as we pointed out, aspirationally, where we're still trying to be. But if you had to choose one or two key concepts that you hope readers are going to take away from this, especially in today's day and age, what would they be?
I think it's a good reminder that we have political principles, you know, that we are a nation of laws, not of men, that we believe that all people are created equal, that there is no such thing as second-class citizenship. The colonists were reacting very negatively to a series of British laws. And we talk about taxation without representation. It's a phrase I think every American knows. But it wasn't just that they objected to being taxed, although they did, but they were being treated in ways that a British citizen in London or Edinburgh or Oxford would not be. Their rights were being violated, and they knew it. They were not being treated as full citizens. They resented it. They thought it was unfair. They had good, solid political arguments. I won't get into too much here, but they were correct. Their rights were being violated. And they said there's no such thing as second-class citizens. And we will not accept that.
Well, you've decoded the Constitution, the Declaration. What's next for you?
Well, we've started a series for middle grade readers. Did You Hear What Happened? The first book was Did You Hear What Happened at Salem, about the Salem witch trials. The second one comes out in the fall. Did You Hear What Happened at the Alamo? And next year, Did You Hear What Happened at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire in 1911, where 146 workers died when an owner locked a door and blocked their exit.
To learn more, the book is The Declaration Decoded, A Guide to the Document That Inspired Our Nation, by Katie Kennedy. Katie, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.